So interviews are frequently pitched my way, and anyone who sits in this seat who does this sort of thing on the radio, on TV, or writes newspaper columns gets these pitches. And I thought this one couldn't be more timely. The name of this book is Syria, Remember Me. And the author of this incredibly beautiful, I mean, the images are amazing, coffee table book, is someone who lived in Syria for some number of years. Deborah Felmuth, welcome to WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, how many years did you actually live in Syria?
Well, I lived, starting in 1991, I lived in Syria continuously for about 5 years. I was actually teaching music in an international school there. And then from 1996 until 2012, I lived in Syria for about half of each year, about 6 months per year.
So how does it come to be that a person who's from the United States says, even back then, I want to go and live in Syria, of all places? How did that come about?
Yeah, well, it's my particular history, I guess. I grew up a child of the 60s, protesting the Vietnam War and really believing when the Vietnam War was over that we had done it. We had protested war out of existence, you know. I was naive and full of heart that might be the truth. So when we entered the Gulf War in 1991, I was quite upset about the fact, even though I realized that I knew nothing of the circumstances. Ignorance is sometimes, you know, a passport, and usually it's not a good one. But in this case, it turned out to be a good thing because I went and decided to take a job in an international school teaching music in the Middle East in order that I might learn something. And it was my very, very good fortune to land in the lap of the oldest continuously inhabited city in the world, in Damascus, Syria.
So you lived there, started by
teaching school.
Right. And by living there all that time, you became, I assume, accustomed to their culture. I'm going to fast forward a little bit because I suppose at the end of the day, this is what people want to know. We have our thoughts about the Middle East and what it must be like, particularly places like Syria, you know, where terrorists are born and all that. To live there, what is it really like?
Well, the first thing that I can say is that the reason I stayed for so long was because I was deeply affected and indeed fell in love with the culture. Arabic culture is full of honor, dignity, respect. Well, none of those words would be used today in describing what is going on there. So I've written this book in order to give people some of the information about that culture. And I am deeply distressed, as is everyone else, about what this latest turn of events is. But I can say that the culture, in its intact and most beauteous form, is one of the most extraordinary studies of the art of relationship that I've ever encountered in the world. Even the naming of each other, when people call each other, they don't use their given names, but rather their relationship names. So I was, for instance, known as wife of my uncle, or by the children in the family, or someone might be known as father of Steve, or mother of David, sister of Julia. And so the art of relationship is a very, very tender art and full of respect. Another just a little tiny hint of the culture might be in how they say welcome. When you knock on the door and someone opens, they would say to you in Arabic, ahlan wa sahlan, which means like family and on level ground, because ahl comes from the word family and sahel is a wide open plain. So when somebody welcomes you in and says, oh, ahla wa sahlan, they're saying come in like family and on level ground.
And so I'm sure all of that is true, and that's fascinating. But I've also read, here's what I've noticed about you in talking to you on the phone. You're a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Women aren't so, they're not treated like they are in America. Or is that completely our mistake?
It's largely a mistake. And it's a complicated answer. I'll try to make it clear right now. Before this uprising and before the hijacking of what was a genuine call for a reform, that was only a brief period of time before other forces began to exert very terrible influence. Syria was the most secular country in the Middle East. Now, because of that, women in Syria had a great variety of choices, for instance, in how they wanted to dress and in how they wanted to practice their religion, be it Christian, Jewish, or Muslim. So you might have seen members of the same family, women in the same family, dressed in the latest fashions, the tightest jeans that you can imagine, or they might have been dressed very demurely with simply a veil surrounding the face so that the face can be seen but the hair is covered. Or they might have been very conservative women who were really covering up. But it's the woman's choice. There's a saying in Arabic that, if I translate it, means paradise lies at the feet of the mother, which means that the mother is the most revered person, and therefore all women, because all women could be mothers, are revered. I was extremely well protected and very much honored because I was a woman in Syria.
But
and that's something that doesn't come across at all.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to interrupt. I'm sorry. But then you read about instances all the time in the popular press anyway where women aren't treated with the kind of respect you just referred to.
Well, right now, in any area in which ISIS is in control, women are treated much as they might be treated in Saudi Arabia, where women are not allowed to drive cars and women must be dressed in black abaya or full cloaks all of the time. So in the areas of Syria which ISIS now controls, women are no longer free. But up until 2 years ago, they had great freedom. There were more women in university than men in Syria at the time that I last left there in 2012. And that was true for a good decade or perhaps more.
Yeah, I'm not surprised about the misconceptions. I think that happens. I think these sorts of things snowball, and we get some idea. And I want to talk about more of these misconceptions. Deborah Felmuth is the author of Syria, Remember Me. Deborah, here's my next question for you. We were talking about some of the misconceptions, particularly as it pertains to women. How about the feeling we have in general about Syria? I mean, you say Syria to someone on the street today. In fact, and I know you don't want to get too much into the politics of all this, but my goodness, every presidential candidate has had a strong view about it. And on the Republican side, especially, saying, don't let the refugees in. How do you feel about that? Who are most of these people that are refugees, and how can we protect against those infiltrating among them that are terrorists?
Right. Good questions, all of them. Some of them I can answer, and some of them I probably can't, but I will try. The refugees are people who need our help, and we have, I believe, a moral and a holy responsibility to do anything that we can, particularly in the immediate term, to help them, because they are fleeing situations which are intolerable. However, I would like to say that most refugees actually want to return home, so that our greater moral responsibility is to do everything we can to prevent their country from being utterly destroyed. And they are leaving only because it is unsafe, not because they don't love their home. And their home is a very extraordinary country and a beautiful country. So it's very complicated when we say, what can we do to help? One of the arguments can very strongly be made for we should get out of Syria. We should encourage no more weapons being dropped into Syria, because weapons are only used to kill. They're not used to help. So when we continue to have weapons drops to moderate rebels, and time again we have seen these fall into the hands of the quote-unquote wrong people, we are not helping the situation. Unfortunately, the Americans are not the only people who have their hands in some, you know, effort to help, but very often complicating and making matters worse. The Saudis, the Qataris, the Turks, the French all have very, very different agendas and reasons they think the Syrian war should be solved or you know, changed according to their agendas, none of which are really going to come to pass. The Syrians themselves are the ones who need to be able to do it. And
but the Syrians,
for that to happen,
yeah,
we need
but,
to get out.
But on the other side of that coin is that if the Syrians, who clearly aren't able to do it for themselves, if ISIS controls even more of the region, then isn't that a bad thing, that ISIS, their influence would be growing and growing and growing, and we want to do something about that? And you left out the Russians and the English and many other countries as well. So it's...
Right. I shouldn't have left out the Russians or the Iranians. You're correct in that. Absolutely. Everybody's got their hand in there right now.
Right.
And it certainly would be a bad thing if ISIS were to grow. However, I think that the competing ideologies that have gone in with an effort to make the war go the way they wanted it to go, be it America or Russia or any of the other players, has made matters worse. And so even though it is a, you know, it's a strong thing for me to say get out, I do believe that it's the place where we need to start, or at least certainly we need to stop weaponizing. We certainly need to stop weaponizing.
Yeah. Well,
you know,
I
wrote the book because I wanted to try and give people a feel and a look. As you said, there are many, many photographs in it. There's 200 color plates. A feel for the culture that is being destroyed. Because we only read these headlines, we only hear the pundits talking about the political situation, we don't really understand who is this extraordinarily diverse population, multi-ethnic and polyreligious. And so I think it's very important to humanize this. If we really feel the human element underneath the fabric of the culture, we may begin to extricate ourselves and say, wait a second, these are people, not statistics.
We only have a couple of minutes here. How could this, you could give a 3-hour answer to this, I'm sure, but how could this happen to a country so quickly, relatively speaking? And again, we have very little time here.
Well, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but I think the only reason it happened so quickly to this country was because many outside players became involved almost instantly. In fact, had laid the groundwork from before 2011 when the first uprising took place in Daraa. And that's a sad thing to say, and I'm not much of a conspiracy theorist, but I will say that having been in Syria at the time of the first uprising and continuing to be there through May of 2012, I can speak from experience that very rapidly foreign players came in and started to overturn. I wish that I could say that it was a homegrown revolution, because I am perfectly aware of the fact that Syria needs and needed then reform. Bashar al-Assad was certainly trying and had begun some of the economic, in particular, reforms that were needed. But more were needed, and they were needed faster. Educational reforms also desperately needed. I think one thing that Americans don't understand is, well, why doesn't democracy just take hold? And I think largely the reason is because the style of education, which is predominant in the larger Middle East and certainly in Syria, is not one that encourages people to think independently. And so, therefore, democracy becomes a challenge which they do not know how to handle.
Because
they have not trained their mind.
It's fascinating, and I'm cutting you off only because we're out of time. I mean, we could go on for hours here. I'd like to.
It's true.
At some point. I'm certainly keeping your phone number. Syria, Remember Me is the name of the book. Deborah Felmuth is the author. Where can folks get the book, Deborah?
The best place is on the website, SyriaRememberMe.com. Independent bookshops also on the East Coast will carry it, but it isn't on Amazon or any of the big box stores. So SyriaRememberMe.com is the best place.
We will.
It's a limited edition, so if you want a copy, order it now.
Okay. We will remember. SyriaRememberMe.com. Deborah Felmuth, the author, thank you so very much.
You're welcome, Steve. It's a pleasure talking with you.